What is Satanism?
Satanism is the world's first carnal religion. Carnal religion. Carnal, carnal, carnal religion. Satanism is thrown at Christianity altogether. Thrown at Christianity altogether. And we see them as being irrelevant, irrelevant, irrelevant. We see them as being irrelevant to mankind.
Satanism has grown to a point now where it's an established religion more and more. People are going through their lives as Satanists. People are going through their lives as Satanists. The population as a whole are beginning to understand that it's not some adolescent fad.
We're talking about your kids out of the public school system. What was their initial reaction?
The minute it was done, the relationships within the family got so much stronger that we wondered why we hadn't done it in the first place. The child in question would have said, now my focus is on learning and my family, not what I'm going to wear, not who I'm going to impress. And we were, in fact, people commented on it all the time that we were the most closely knit family anyone had ever seen.
What, in your opinion, would be the best way to go about recognizing pseudo-Satanism?
They should write down the following word: the Satanic Bible. When we have people who are so distorting what Satanism is about that they move it into a deification, they move it into a form of Judeo-Islamic Christianity where you are worshiping some kind of an external deity, which has all power and all of this, this can really work against any person who wants to develop strength within.
Why dabble in the dark side when you can dive right in?
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan! Hail Satan!
It's Satanism Today. Here's David Harris.
I've come to the conclusion that Chinese food, margaritas don't go together.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely not. Satanism Today. That's my opening thought for the day.
It's profound.
Yeah. 631-458-0592 is the phone number. I am David Harris. You can also Skype us. The Skype ID is Satanism Today Radio. And if you're out there listening live, why don't you join us in the chat room? Links are all over the website, www.satanismtoday.net. And I met our guest tonight in person for the first time when I was the guest judge on the Conti and Kenny Show's No Comics Laughing Contest. I had communicated with her through email, chat, and phone conversations for months prior to that because I found her to be a very profoundly interesting individual, particularly from the standpoint of being a very adept lesser magician. Watched her over the course of several months as she charmed a bunch of boorish, alcohol-fueled, lack of self-esteem-driven men.
Oh, yeah, that's hard.
through the wile and guile of her beauty, her charm, her wit, her comedy, and, of course, you know, her ultimate and crowning achievement, of course, was charming me. I'd like to welcome to the show comedian Heather Height.
Thank you, Magister Harris. You made me all blushy.
I suppose we should start the evening by wishing you a happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes, I love my birthday.
Yes, it is your birthday. 19 years old again, I see.
Yes. No, 17.
17.
Just jeez.
Let's start with how you developed an interest in stand-up comedy.
I think I developed an interest in stand-up comedy from the time I was a little kid. My main, like, pastime was watching comedy, and especially in the 80s when that was practically all that was on television, you know. the you're making me, you're weirding me out sitting behind me.
Sorry, I had to adjust something.
No, that's okay. But like on, like, what did they have in the 80s? They didn't have Bravo yet. The Carolines and Two Drink Minimum, you know. And I was raised on George Carlin albums. You know, comedy was like a really big deal in our family. And to be funny was more important than just about anything. So our entire family, everybody, I'm the least funny person in my family.
So comedy being very important in your family, you sort of, you kind of saw it as a calling.
In a way, yeah. And I actually didn't realize that everybody didn't feel that way. So I didn't think to pursue it because I thought everybody saw somebody on stage and thought, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense at all, I figured everybody felt that way. So, you know, it was just a thing that and then I realized, I didn't start this until I was in my 30s. Mm-hmm. I didn't set foot on stage until I was in my 30s, which is way late. And then I didn't realize till then that no, not everybody does want to see, you know, be on stage, and not everybody sees somebody up there and says, "Oh, I could do that," you know.
So, what was it like the first time you ever stepped onto a stage?
It was one of the most awesome things I've ever experienced in my life. It's like right up there with having my kids and falling in love, and you know, just the it's a rush and. It's everything that every comic would ever tell you. It's the biggest high and the scariest thing, and it's all adrenaline and butterflies. But at the same time, I was really lucky because I was in a very safe environment comparative to what other comics walk into, because I was already pretty well entrenched in the comedy community in the area that I lived in. So I was surrounded by friends who were very supportive the first time that I went on stage.
Mm-hmm. Now, sort of set the scenario as far as who, you know, what occurred that night. You know, your what, the moments leading up to it, what was going through your mind?
Well, my ex-boyfriend was also one of my best friends at the time, and he kind of influenced, and he absolutely not kind of, he absolutely influenced me to try stand up, and he wrote my first three jokes for me, and I was just excited, and I felt like I felt very much like I had found kind of a home, and I felt that way before I went on stage, because like I there was this entire group of people that I related to on a level that I'd never related to anyone before. So it was in the basement of Wisecrackers Comedy Club in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bar down there. And it looks very much like, you know, a frat house. Ah. It's just this dingy little basement, you know, concrete floor bar. And it was very, like, bohemian in nature. There's, like, comedy is kind of a loose thing there. There was people that would go up and, like, improv poetry even, or but it was all very open and very accepting. And so it wasn't so much nerves as it was excitement, and I had this really great, and still do have this really great association with going on stage, where I don't feel, I generally usually don't get nervous. I usually just get very excited that I'm going back to this place that I feel so good in.
Let's talk about where your comedy comes from now. You grew up in a very funny household. Obviously, your relatives are all, you know, just to you and to perhaps anyone that knows them, you know, funny to be around. But they're conversationally funny.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between being conversationally funny and being funny on stage?
Well, I think most of us find that, you know, we're told, as comics, I mean, that, you know, oh, you should be in comedy, you should be stand-up, you're so funny. We're told that by coworkers and family and friends. And then you go on stage and you try to say what you said that was funny in your little circle of friends, and it doesn't translate the same way. There's a rhythm to it, and there's a formula to it. And as soon as you find out what the formula and the rhythm is, then you have to forget all that and go back to being conversational, which is what I'm learning now. So it's like taking that perfect moment when you made all your friends laugh and finding a way to translate that to a bunch of strangers who you have to convince are your buddies, you know.
So it's just a matter of really teaching yourself that the audience is there to laugh.
Yeah, and I was really fortunate also to I helped a lot of comics write, like, for years before I became a comic, and I had this perspective of an audience member, and you realize that if you think about what's going through your mind as you're watching someone on stage, which I think is such an important thing to think about when you're up there, you're really on their side. And a piece of you is up there with them. And so when they fail, a piece of you dies. And so when you're not funny, everybody in the audience is sorry. It feels that on some level. And sometimes it translates into anger on their part. Because, you know, mobs can be a little emotionally immature.
And we'll have more when we return. Stay tuned. You're listening to Satanism Today.
Now available from Purging Talon is the debut authored book by Church of Satan Magister Matt G. Paradise, Bearing the Devil's Mark. Bearing the Devil's Mark is a bold and no-nonsense treatise on the subject of Satanism. Not from the perverse pen of bitter and jealous Christians or even their pagan counterparts, but straight from the satanic perspective itself. Sex, love, politics, technology, the God religions, and more. All brought to you by someone with over 25 years of actively living the satanic philosophy. To order, log on to purgingtalon.com. Bearing the Devil's Mark, new from Purging Talon. Do you bear the mark?
Radio Free Satan.
The most diabolical name in internet radio is back. Radio Free Satan. Just log on to www.radiofreesatan.com and indulge in the sinister sounds of programs like The Devil's Mischief featuring Reverend Bill M., Deep Six with DJ Nuris featuring the latest independent artists, The Dark Arts with DJ Evergreen playing your classical favorites from centuries past, Metal Invaders with Warlock Sonny Bellavance, Velvet Darkness with DJ Dracul, spinning your goth and industrial favorites. Revel in the dark ambient wonder of Chaos Sedated with Heathen Panzer. Venture into the morgue with The Monster, playing the blackest black and death metal. Step into the Pleasure Dome with J Nothing, playing all your metal favorites. And of course, Outsite Radio Hours with Tom Schulte. Log on now to www.radiofreesatan.com. www.radiofreesatan.com. Available now from the House of Netherworld, a stirring and brilliant tribute to the founder of the Church of Satan, Dr. Anton Zandor LaVey. The Anton LaVey bust has been sculpted in the neoclassical style of the late 19th century and reflects a refined and artistic sensibility. This will surely become the centerpiece of many an altar in the finest of lairs. Each bust is hand-cast and hand-finished in a faux bronze designer polyresin and will outlast us all. This profound piece of artwork can be yours for $135 plus shipping and will include a special blend granular incense entitled Maestro, courtesy of femaleaddictions.com. The Anton LaVey bust is also available in a special Iron Age finish, which is available to Church of Satan members only. Production on this product was limited to 200 pieces, so order yours today. www.antonlaveybust.com. www.antonlaveybust.com.
You know, dogs are different than cats, and hey, what if Jack Nicholson were...
Hey, what if We Are the World was sung by the cast of Friends? I think it might go something like this.
Hi, everyone, I'm Jay Leno. Anyone remember when I was funny? Eat Doritos.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dane
cook.
Are you fed up with comedy that's made for the masses? Sick of stand-up comedian hacks with the same old routines that you've heard 1,000 times before? Equally tired of shock jocks who equate loudness with laughter? Hello, my name is Reverend Bill M., creator and host of The Devil's Mischief, a show where every week I present a new hour of comedy and novelty of devilish proportions. So tune in to The Devil's Mischief. Visit devilsmischief.com or radiofreesatan.com to download the latest podcast. The Devil's Mischief. Carnal comedy clips and netherworld novelty numbers simply not made for the masses.
I'm a little more than that.
Sophisticated.
Vanity is definitely my favorite sin.
And satanic.
Let me give you a little inside information about God.
It's Satanism Today. And here's your host, David Harris.
631-458-0592 is the number. Satanism Today. I am David Harris. Give us a call if you have any questions for our guest, the lovely, talented Miss Heather Height. You can also Skype us. The Skype ID is Satanism Today Radio. And if you're out there listening live, why don't you join us in the chat room? The links are all over the website, www.satanismtoday.net. And of course, you can email us throughout the week at reverendharris@satanismtoday.net. Heather, what were some of the key influences on your comedy?
Key influences on my comedy?
Key influences on your comedy.
Absolutely horrific and tragic childhood experiences. You have another question, or you want me to keep answering that one?
You please.
You took a breath.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I think that a lot of us are kind of self-medicators in that way, you know. I've told you some of the stories. I think that I could have either gone to psychiatrist, or I could write jokes about the shit that happened to me throughout my life. And I know one of your favorite stories, and I have yet to find a way to make this funny on stage, is about me being kidnapped by crackheads. Again, you seem to find that very funny.
I certainly do.
But like we were talking about before, to be able to translate that into something that's like kind of, you know, consumable, so to speak, with it, it's I'm mesmerized by people that can do that. Like Louis C.K. can say some things that are so true and so raw and so real and make them relatable for the most part. I mean, there's still people that don't get it, but
right.
and fucking hilarious. And I haven't been able to capture that in the crackhead kidnapping story as of yet. All I know is I was sitting at a table with a family full of people and had no idea that I was their captive that morning while my boyfriend went off to find money to pay for his crack.
Now, we've talked about that off the air. What makes that story funny is the fact that you had no idea.
I had no idea. I'm sitting there eating their Rice Krispies, and I'm sitting at the table. And even then, like, I was about 19 at the time, and I was cracking jokes. Cracking jokes. Ha ha. Anyway. Boo. I was trying to joke around with them. They're all looking at me stunned. Like, I guess their son was the guy who was smoking crack with my boyfriend in the basement all night. And they're just staring at me like I was some kind of demon sitting at the table. And they're eating their breakfast and the kids are getting ready for school. And there's nothing like the cold, hard light of day when you do drugs all night long. There's nothing weirder than normalcy. Like, just normal things. Like, I don't know, I used to do a lot of acid, and you'd spend a lot of time in the dark, you're up all night long, and everything is really cool, and then like the sun comes up and people are like going off to work in suits and buying coffee and washing their cars or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just the strangest thing in the world. It's so surreal. And the morning news is on and the kids are watching Sesame Street, and like, that is the strangest feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. When you're so separated from society for an entire evening, and then you're sitting at a breakfast table, you know, captive of a family of crackheads. That's bizarre.
But now, as a comic, you see the comedy within the context of that kind of a story.
I absolutely do, but I don't think that I'm good enough to, sooner or later, I'll find a way to write that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I told Joe Conte about my father. I really did learn how to drive when I was 14 because my dad used to take me to the bar with him, and he'd get drunk, and I would drive him home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an after-school special. That's not funny. But I made a bit out of it because he said, you've got to write that, you know, and you've got to make sure that people understand that really happened, that that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious that your father used to have you drive him home when he was drunk. So it's really true that out of tragedy comes comedy, at least in my case, you know.
Well, if you think about it, some of the greatest comedy in the world is born of tragedy. Think of all of the great, just horrifically dark comic movies there are that are out there.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith immediately comes to mind. Any Kevin Smith mm-hmm. movie, just inherent darkness there. As slapsticky as Mel Brooks gets, there's a lot of darkness in Mel Brooks.
Oh, terribly dark. It was just broken. Broken man.
So, from the depths of horrificness comes this laughter. Now, what do you say to people that don't understand that? You know, especially the politically correct assholes who and say, oh my God, you can't make fun of that. Oh, that's such a horrible thing. My sister was, you know, she had muscular dystrophy and was run over by a quadriplegic driving a motorcycle.
Well, I think that for the most part, personally, I haven't been inflicted with that. I have this some kind of charm that I get away with a lot. I don't know what that's about, but I've been in the midst of other comics who that happens to, and it's just you have to glaze over that because nothing is sacred. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start making things or yourself too important, then it's not funny anymore. And that's all there is to it. So I would, you know, thank them for their, you know, bullshit and send them on their way. I mean, there's really nothing else you could do about that. But personally, I have been very blessed with not having to encounter people telling me that I can't joke around about a certain topic. I've had people not understand. I've had people, you know, I don't know, like kind of say stupid things to me about things that weren't true, because you take what's true and then you exaggerate it. Mm-hmm. or you twist it around somehow to make it like I've never really set my children on fire. That's not true. You know? So somebody could come up to me and give me parenting tips, you know, and I would just smile and nod. And this is a very funny story. Kenny Michaels, I was at one of his shows. And he called a girl a cunt. And it almost started. He almost got, like, he was being threatened, like they were going to jump him after the show. Her brother was there. He's all pissed off. And then she comes up to him. And he never did anything really to make peace, but people are pussies, you know.
Right.
And she comes up to him. And she's holding his hand and she's shaking his hand. And he's looking her in the eye and he's got, like, a grin on his face, you know. And she's going, you know, you could say bitch and you can call me a whore. But the C word is just out of bounds. And he's just smiling and nodding. And I'm looking at his face and I'm like thinking he's thinking, you fucking cunt. And he never said it, you know, but that's what you have to do. There's a little bit of networking involved. And as lacking in boundaries and ethics as we are in our core, we have to, in order to be able to continue to have this access, we have to maneuver our way there any way that we can. And sometimes that takes not calling a cunt a cunt.
Well, that's all manipulation. That's all what we refer to as lesser magic.
Mm-hmm.
And something else you and I can talk about. Oh. In addition to being very funny, you are stunningly beautiful. And it's one of the things I first noticed about you.
Oh.
Was not only are you beautiful, but you know how to use your beauty and accent the things about you that are beautiful. You had an entire auditorium full of men captivated with you the day I met you.
Yeah.
And I was the only one that was calling you out on it.
Oh, I know. I love that. I absolutely adored that, too. As much as I like that, I really take a lot of joy. The more people, and it's amazing that I struggle, because I really do. At this point in my career, I struggle on stage. I haven't been doing it in a long time, so there's something not getting translated up there. Because the more people that I can do that to at once, the happier I am.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just remember that when I get behind a microphone in front of a crowd, I would be fucking famous. Because that's what it's all about, is honing that ability. Because everything is a manipulation, and this above all.
Mm-hmm. Now, conversations you and I have had, you really, as a human being, didn't want to embrace your femininity until after your daughter was born.
No, I didn't. I was beyond tomboy, like, as a kid. Even when I was a little boy, I used to go to the beach in swim trunks, and I used to pretend when I was a little boy, see, when I was a little girl. And I think I was, from the time until I was like 8 years old, I would pretend to be a boy and go to the beach and play with little boys all day and see how long I could get away with it. Mm. You know, I really didn't. I was just like a borderline, like, gender identity crisis my entire childhood. And I don't think that I really felt like a woman until I had Audrey May, and I was like 30 years old by then.
Mm-hmm. And what clicked in your head on that day?
I really don't know. I don't know if she like tapped into some kind of hormone supply that I wasn't getting or something. It was just this I was mesmerized by her. That blew me away, having this little girl. And she is such a, I mean, she, her favorite colors are pink and purple, and she likes, you know, rainbows and ponies, and she's just a fucking girl, you know. And I was never like that, and it was amazing to me that this, she's like a princess. I was never a princess. So I think that I realized how much I wanted that. God, I just wanted to embrace being a woman all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. It sounds so fucking dorky, but I really did. I was always up a tree or, you know, playing in a river or something when I was a kid. I was, you know, I wasn't a girl, mm-hmm. you know, so to speak.
And so now, having sort of come out of that state of arrested development, where now, like, your gender has caught up with, you know, the rest of you, you're almost making up for lost time, because you're one of the most hyper feminine women I know.
Yeah.
You're never anything but immaculately made up, at any given point in time. And you turn heads everywhere.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
I look for these things. I am your mate.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, when I do something, I do it all the way. And I not only embrace being feminine, but it, like, I've just, everything about femininity, my role models and idols, and, you know, Marilyn Monroe and Mae West, and I've just, like, thrown myself full throttle into everything feminine that I could get my hands on. Mm. I love pinup girls and, you know, anything that exudes female sensuality.
And we will have more when we come back. Stay tuned, you're listening to Satanism Today.
Radio Free Satan.
The most diabolical name in internet radio is back. Radio Free Satan. Just log on to www.radiofreesatan.com and indulge in the sinister sounds of programs like The Devil's Mischief featuring Reverend Bill M., Deep Six with DJ Nuris featuring the latest independent artists, The Dark Arts with DJ Evergreen playing your classical favorites from centuries past, Metal Invaders with Warlock Sonny Bellavance, Velvet Darkness with DJ Dracul, spinning your goth and industrial favorites. Revel in the dark ambient wonder of Chaos Sedated with Heathen Panzer. Venture into the morgue with The Monster, playing the blackest black and death metal. Step into the Pleasure Dome with Jay Nothing, playing all your metal favorites. And of course, Outsite Radio Hours with Tom Schulte. Log on now to www.radiofreesatan.com. www.radiofreesatan.com.
Now available from Purging Talon is the debut authored book by Church of Satan Magister Matt G. Paradise, Bearing the Devil's Mark. Bearing the Devil's Mark is a bold and no-nonsense treatise on the subject of Satanism. Not from the perverse pen of bitter and jealous Christians, or even their pagan counterparts, but straight from the satanic perspective itself. Sex, love, politics, technology, the God religions, and more. All brought to you by someone with over 25 years of actively living the satanic philosophy. To order, log on to purgingtalon.com. Bearing the Devil's Mark, new from Purging Talon. Do you bear the mark?
You know, dogs are different than cats. And hey, what if Jack Nicholson were...
Hey, what if We Are the World was sung by the cast of Friends? I think it might go something like this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jay Leno. Anyone remember when I was funny? Eat Doritos.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dane Cook.
Are you fed up with comedy that's made for the masses? Sick of stand-up comedian hacks with the same old routines that you've heard 1,000 times before? Equally tired of shock jocks who equate loudness with laughter? Hello, my name is Reverend Bill M., creator and host of The Devil's Mischief. a show where every week I present a new hour of comedy and novelty of devilish proportions. So tune in to The Devil's Mischief. Visit devilsmischief.com or radiofreesatan.com to download the latest podcast. The Devil's Mischief. Carnal comedy clips and netherworld novelty numbers simply not made for the masses.
Available now from the House of Netherworld. A stirring and brilliant tribute to the founder of the Church of Satan, Dr. Anton Zandor LaVey. The Anton LaVey bust has been sculpted in the neoclassical style of the late 19th century and reflects a refined and artistic sensibility. This will surely become the centerpiece of many an altar in the finest of lairs. Each bust is hand-cast and hand-finished in a faux bronze designer polyresin and will outlast us all. This profound piece of artwork can be yours for $135 plus shipping and will include a special blend granular incense entitled Maestro, courtesy of femaleaddictions.com. The Anton LaVey bust is also available in a special Iron Age finish, which is available to Church of Satan members only. Production on this product was limited to 200 pieces, so order yours today. www.antonlaveybust.com www.antonlaveybust.com.
Dancing, necromancy, priests of chanting. Warning, the contents of this show actually make sense.
Walton raised on television to believe that one day we'd all be millionaires and movie gods and rock stars. But we won't. I'm very, very pissed off.
It's Satanism Today. Here's your host, David Harris.
That's right, Satanism Today. I am David Harris. Give us a call, 631-458-0592, if you're out there listening live on the 2nd of September. If you have a question for our lovely guest, comedian Heather Height.
I always, like, all day long, every time I saw that, like, somebody asked somebody, like, at a table next to me what the date was, and I was like, how could they not know what date it is? It's my birthday. I forget that it's not, well, it's like a holiday, but it's not. Because it's also a VJ Day, the day that we signed the treaty with Japan.
Ah, yes, yes.
But, you know,
see, which is funny because you compare that to my birthday, which is the day we bombed Nagasaki.
Yeah, and my daughter Audrey Mae's birthday is the day that Japan surrendered.
Ah,
isn't that neat?
Yeah, look at that.
Our birthdays all good. They match.
That's right.
They go together.
That's right. A series of dead Japanese people. Originated from my
bond
birthday
us all.
Through your daughter's birthday into yours.
Yes.
It's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, birthday in Satanism being the biggest holiday of the year.
My favorite day.
That's right.
My birthday.
And this is what you wanted for your birthday. You wanted me to make you the center of attention for an hour from 9 to 10.
It's all about me.
And the only other thing I want to know before we continue the show is that my chat room moderator has been moderating my chat room pretty much since the day I started doing this show again, and he can't type my first name correctly into the chat room. Told somebody that Davis Harris answers the phones. Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate that. Let's talk about the process you go through when crafting something you're going to use on stage.
Okay.
I've seen you write, and I've seen you go through your thought process. Why don't you, elaborate on that for the audience?
It wasn't always like what you see now. Like I say that, okay, I have an idea, and I'm going to work on this idea, and then you see me develop that into something translatable. Mm-hmm. At first, I did what my first teacher, Scott Bruce, called writing from the stage, where I would, because it's an open mic, it's a very open kind of forum, I would take those ideas. I would say, okay, there's something funny about this, and I would literally just go up and find out what it was on stage. Mm-hmm. In that way. I don't really have that luxury anymore. I don't go to a lot of open mics, so now I have to work it out on paper. Mm-hmm. But I have a better idea now of what might get a laugh and how things work rhythmically. So at first I would think, okay, there's the joke about my mother, for instance, my sociopathic mom. Mm-hmm. The whole mommy dearest thing, I wrote that from the stage. I was, there's something really funny about this. And my whole life I had kind of made similar little jokes about my mom, you know. And so I went up and I just literally said, okay, my mom is a sociopath. That line still doesn't work. My mom is a sociopath, still doesn't get a laugh. But the we were watching TV together, and this really did happen in a way. And she says, see, you don't have it so bad. And I'm like, Mom, we're watching Mommy Dearest. You know, and it just worked itself out that way. And then I would get off the stage and I would write that down and remember where the laugh was and then structure it into something. Mm-hmm. But now I find something funny, or we'll have a conversation and you'll be like, oh my God, you know, you should try that on stage. Mm-hmm. And I can take this little thing in my head that how I see something structured, and I can kind of place it into that formula. Hmm. and hopefully it'll work on stage, because I don't get to open mics anymore.
Warlock DeVille in the chat room has actually got a very good question. To what do you attribute the success of hack comedians versus people who are genuinely funny?
I think, and that is the most frustrating thing in the world, because I agonize over every syllable and will be met with silence and crickets over something that I just poured my guts into. And then a comic will go up there and do shit jokes and impressions and get a standing ovation. I'm not naming any names. No, he's not a hack. But I'm still not naming any names. I think that it's just a lot of times it's just because it's easy, mm-hmm. you know, and there is still, I know comics who are considered hack who realize it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, well, you can go and you can be on your high horse, you as in the other comics who disrespect them. And I'm going to go on and I'm going to have a sitcom. And it's really fucking true. You know, I've had these conversations with headliners, and a lot of them are headliners. Mm-hmm. And it's just because it's what people want. It's so easy. It's so understandable and it's so predictable. Laughs are happening in a rolling manner before the punch hits, because people know what's coming and they're excited, right. or they feel part of it, and it's easy to relate to. There's not a lot of thought involved. And I think that that's it.
It's manipulation through the use of familiarity.
Yeah. And also a lot of comics, and I really don't want to name any names, but they have charisma flying out of their ass. And that has so much more to do with it than what they're saying. Hmm. That they found this relatable, likable thing that people hang on to. And if you're likable, people are going to laugh at anything. Hmm. It's much more, I don't want to compare. I'm trying to be nice. It's much more difficult to be abrasive up there. Mm-hmm. Even right up to the very end, George Carlin had nights when he had a shitty set. Mm-hmm. And I had a client when I was a massage therapist who went to see him in Las Vegas. And he got up there and the first joke bombed. And then he went on for maybe another 5-10 minutes. And he's like, sorry, folks, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And he walked off the stage. And this was like maybe 2 years ago, mm-hmm. you know. So it's just, and it's just harder. You're taking a risk, and you're asking that audience to take that leap with you. Whereas if you're going up there and just being fun, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they're paying for. They're paying to go and laugh and have fun, and they're the headliners that people consider to be hack. Are giving them what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people in the audience don't give a good goddamn if you're a hack or not.
They're not in it for the art. They're in it for a couple of beers and an easy laugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's very rare that you find someone that wants to think when they go to a comedy show.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of have an issue with the whole judging comics as hacks. On some levels, because these are the same, this is the same kind of old school vaudevillian style of comedy that we all start, all of our roots come from, you know. But if Groucho Marx got up on stage today, we would all be calling him a hack, you know. Some of the greatest comedians of all and we see, like, if the Three Stooges did stand up today, every comic in New York and New Jersey would be talking behind their backs, you know. If we didn't know who they were, we'd be like, those hacks. They hit each other. How do they get those people to laugh at that shit, you know? Like, we'd be pissed. But now we think they're geniuses, you know. That's where it all came from.
Oh, yeah, they're the ones that invented it. But
yeah.
But you can kind of flash it forward, you know, 40 years. And you look at a guy like Richard Pryor, who pioneered so much of the material and literally wrote so much of the material that the modern black comic does today.
Yeah.
Almost every black comic you see out there, with the exception of, I could probably count them on one hand, every black comic out there is doing Richard Pryor.
Yeah. Not, you know, either that or Chappelle at this point.
Well, Chappelle is one of the guys I would count on my one hand as being a guy who, for the first time in a long time, is coming along and doing something really original.
Well, that's what
really
I'm saying. The comics are either copying Chappelle or Pryor, you know. They think that they can go up there and just be big like that, and they don't have that little thing that was going on. Something more cerebral going on than just, you know, I shot my car, you know.
So, where would you like to be with your comedy?
I really don't know, because I've always been the kind of person that I see an opening to some sort of path, and things kind of push me in that direction. So ever since I was a little kid, I've always known I was going to be famous somehow. Mm. And if this is what's going to do it, then that's, you know, but I don't know how, and I don't have like a set plan for it. I think comedy brought me to the internet radio shows, and that'll probably lead me to something else. And although in other aspects of my life I'm very much a goal setter, this has all been much more vague, and it's kind of it's been a lot more fun for me, because I'm pretty into planning and being kind of strict with myself with things, and I haven't been with this. I set little goals, like, okay, I'm gonna write this, I'm gonna get a tight half hour, I'm gonna, you know, and it's all these little steps, and next time I get on stage, I'm gonna nail that, you know, and so it's wherever that, whatever doors open up because of this, it's just exciting to find out rather than having a plan. And that's the really great thing about this industry, is you just don't know where this could lead. Look at all the things that comics do. You know, we know comics that have their own talk shows, and the comics that are warm-up people for other people's shows, and comics that work on game shows, and, you know, you don't know where this is going to lead, you know.
Right.
Jim Norton's on O&A. It's just so vast, the things that this could lead to.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where I want to be or where I'm going to be. I just know that it's going to be something big and successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned internet radio. This is something you've only been doing very recently, literally within the last 4 months.
Yeah.
Started out that you were going to be the first guest on Hate Speech Radio.
Yeah.
And you ended up being my co-host.
Mm-hmm.
What differences do you see between doing a weekly comedy talk show and being a stand-up?
One of my favorite things about being on the radio shows is the thing that I always admired about, like, groups of men. Like, when I was a little kid and my dad and his buddies would hang out, and they'd just have this, like, banter all night long, just laughing, and it's just like this constant one-upmanship with each other. And I used to envy that, and I really felt like boys were so much better at that than girls.
Mm-hmm.
Girls are not as good at witty banter, especially in, like, high school and as children.
Right.
We're not, you know, and I've always wanted, and I found that I'm really good at it. and it's my favorite part of being on these shows is contributing off the top of my head and making men laugh. As weird as that sounds, my ability to have men find me funny is my favorite thing. 'Cause men don't like chick comics.
Right.
You know?
No, we really don't, because, again, you get back to, you know, what makes someone a hack versus what makes someone genuinely funny. How many female comics do you know that do, you know, boyfriend leaves the toilet seat up and God doesn't suck to get your period every month, girls?
Yeah. I don't know. Now, the one thing that, and I've always been of the the same school of thought that, that chicks just ain't funny. Because really a lot of girls don't understand me either. But I've had a lot of comics say, Joe Conte being one of them, that it's not that women aren't as funny. There just aren't as many female comics. There's so many male comics and so many of them suck.
Right.
There's so much fewer women comics. So by, you know, percentage wise.
Right.
There's just going to be the same amount of women comics percentage-wise that suck, so there's fewer good female comics.
Right.
Because of all the people that try it, most of us really suck.
Right.
I've been guilty of sucking myself.
We'll save that for another show. So as we've wrapped this up, I have given you your birthday present.
Thank you, Maggie.
When am I going to get my birthday present of seeing you get up on stage and doing a 15-minute god-awful hack female comedy set?
When I'm no longer in danger of destroying my career over it. He wants me to do an entire set of hack female jokes.
Oh, that'd be so fantastic.
So maybe if you set me up with a show where I'm in no danger of like a booker seeing me, I will write a hack set and do it for you.
It is my dream to just watch her go up on a stage and be like, doesn't it suck every month to get your period, girls? Oh, God.
You're like nails on a chalkboard. I'm going to make myself vomit if I do this. And nobody show up at this show. Honest to God, if this is the show that everybody shows up at, if there's a crowd, you're out, all right? And I'm doing my regular set. Because there's just no way.
Which rung says just do Sex in the City quotes?
Yeah. I think I'd have to make a dress out of a shower curtain first.
Don't you hate it when your boyfriend leaves the toilet seat up, girls? Oh, it's so bombastically awful. It would be great.
I thought you were saying that the woman was saying that it's bombastically awful when men leave the toilet seat up. I was going to say that's too big of a word.
It just makes me happy. Just the thought of...
of me humiliating myself in front of a crowd telling hack jokes.
Yeah.
That's love. That's love right there. Love is when you want to see your mate humiliate herself.
Yes, it certainly is. There is
nice.
No...
nice.
There is no love without humiliation and
not publicly. Not everybody who's in love has to publicly humiliate themselves. Oh, that's marriage. Oh, never mind. That's that whole wedding ceremony thing. That's what the chicken dance is all about. I understand now.
That's right. It's all about public humiliation.
So this means if I do this, then I can forego the chicken dance if we get married.
Yes.
No chicken dance if I do a hack chick set.
Yes.
This wipes out chicken dance. And hokey pokey.
Yes.
I hope you know.
Yes.
This totally. And no electric slide.
I see.
All right?
Okay,
this
fine,
takes out hokey pokey, electric slide, Macarena, and the chicken dance. None of those dances, if we get married, are allowed in our wedding.
I'm a wop. We do hey compadre.
Ah! That's what I got to offer you there, buddy. Uh-huh. All right.
All right. So that's what so hack female set by my next birthday. You have 11 months.
11 months to write a hack set.
It shouldn't be hard. Just I don't know. Just watch. I don't know, like April Brooker or something.
You did not say that. Like she's listening.
Oh, what the hell was that one's name with the really high-pitched, like the scrawny blonde with the high-pitched, squeaky voice used to do Rosie O'Donnell's stand-up show on
VH1?
Oh, she was the biggest hack.
I have no idea. I could do stuff about shaving my legs and, you know, or something about bikini waxing you. Bikini waxing has to be in there. That's a topic, right?
Okay, yeah. That's a thing.
Yeah. Bikini waxing, changing shitty diapers, men leaving the toilet seat up.
All right. That's, we're going to wind this thing up now. I want to thank everybody for listening. It's good to be back. Took a nice couple of weeks off. And, of course, if you've,
People feet.
That's right. Somebody was requesting people feet. September 25th, I want to say.
For which show?
Piano's Bar and Grill.
It's the last Thursday in September.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, the 24th or 25th.
MySpace.com/Heather Height.
Yeah, my shows are all up on there.
And if you would like to learn more about Satanism, you can log on to the Church of Satan website, www.churchofsatan.com, or run on down to your local bookstore, pick up a copy of the Satanic Bible by Anton Zandor LaVey, available in fine Avon paperback. While you're there, pick yourself up a copy of the Satanic Scriptures by our current high priest, Peter H. Gilmore, available from Scapegoat Publishing, and it is a fine extension of Satanic philosophy, if I do say so myself. Go to scapegoatpublishing.com. Special thanks to all of our sponsors. And another very special thanks to Evening Eclipse Candles for making the studio smell very pretty. Go to eveningeclipse.com. And we will tune in tomorrow for Marconi's Regret.
Yes.
7:30 p.m. on Rockland World Radio.
Just go to marconisregret.com and go into our chat room.
Right? It's the latest Harris Media
We're going to start
radio show.
It out of your studio. So.
That's right. My empire grows.
Yeah. And my sense of self diminishes as you overtake.
As I overtake
boyfriend,
every aspect.
Co-host, producer. he lets me out to go to work and eat.
That's right. Keep her chained up in the basement. Fantastic. All right, that's just about going to do it. Until we see you all again, hail Satan. Satanism Today is copywritten 2008 by Harris Media, owned sole proprietorship by yours truly, David Harris. All rights reserved. Any unauthorized rebroadcast of this particular piece of audio is strictly prohibited, ill-advised, and could be hazardous to your health. Have a good night.
Good night.